Good morning. Just before Rabbi Shmiman introduces Rabbi Sass, just a quick, the next 3 months are scheduled, so I just want to, before Purim we'll have Rabbi Hagioff is coming, then Rav Schechter will be coming pre-Pesach, and then for Yom Yerushalayim, Rabbi Stav will be coming for Shabbos, from Shoham. He's the Rav of Shoham, the head of Tzohar, and he will be coming for Shabbos, for especially Yom Yerushalayim Shabbos and the Kol Yom Rishon. So that's our next couple of months. Hope to see you there. And then thank you so much, Rabbi Sachs, for coming.
It's an honor to once again be able to introduce Rabbi Yonason Sachs to our community, to our shul. He has been here in the past. Rabbi Sachs is a very well-known Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University, Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, and he has been a Rav in Passaic of the Agudas Yisrael for many years. He's the Mechaber, is the author of 18 Svarim, and has printed numerous articles also in English. Rabbi Sachs, in addition to being blessed with encyclopedic erudition, is gifted really with a remarkable sense of oratory and the ability to take very complicated information and to present it in the clearest of fashion. It's a rare gift to see that combination, and therefore it's a great covet, a great honor to present to you Rabbi Yonason Sachs to speak on the issue of Lifnei Iver. Apologize. One thank you that I omitted. You see, Rabbi Sachs doesn't forget things. I do. First of all, thank you to Rabbi Yehuda Seif and to our executive director Gwen Horowitz for their preparations in general. Thank you to Abba Krieger and to Dov Daniel and the entire Daniel family for the logistical assistance in setting up breakfast this morning. I think we're around. Are there?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Schmidman. It's always a pleasure to be able to come back to the community to see its growth and to see the determination of people getting together for the purpose of Harbatza Satara. Kadosh Baruch Hu should continue and give you a bracha that the kehila, the shul especially, could continue to grow lahagdol Torah ulahadira. The theme of this year is Lifnei Iver, enabling a fellow Jew to sin. And I wanted to begin with something touching on the Kriya Satora of just simply yesterday, and that, of course, is the focus of the Aseres Adibros. Whenever we divide the mitzvahs Hashem, we have a tendency of doing so into two very different categories. Mitzvahs that are ben adam lechavero, interpersonal relationships, and mitzvahs ben adam lemakom, ritual between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this distinction is a quite fundamental one. The Ramban writes that this is clear from the Aseres Adibros themselves. You know, they could have been given simply on a single luach, but we know that they were given on Shnei Luchos Habris. Why is it that there are two luchos? The Ramban explains because they represent two different domains. The first five are relationships between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The latter half are mitzvos that are essentially interpersonal, ben adam lechavero, with the fascinating comment that the Ramban raises that the mitzvah of kibud avim serves as a bridge, as an elision, between one category and the others. Because kibud avim, no doubt, has elements of both motifs. On the one hand, it is certainly an interpersonal relationship, a mitzvah which is ben adam lechavero. If you look, for example, Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Lamed Gimel, the Sefer HaChinuch writes that this is certainly a form of hakaras hatov. A person is obligated to show thanks to individuals, typically and obviously, when it comes to parents as well. The Midrash Tanchuma writes that kibud avim is an act of priyas hachov. It's paying back a certain sense of a debt. And if a person is not deferential toward parents, that's what the Medrash tells us. He violates the pasuk of lo verasha v'lo yishalem, a person who fails simply to pay back that which is owed. But yet the Ramban tells us that the Gemara also comments in Kedushin that shlosha shutfim v'adam, that whenever a person is born and reared, there is a partnership between parents and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tosus writes, Nivamos and Davav, Hukash kvodam lekvod shamayim. When we honor parents, in essence, we are honoring HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, it's a confluence of these two different elements. On the one hand, a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro. On the other hand, a mitzvah ben adam l'makom. And even though we usually characterize mitzvos in that fashion, we don't always realize that there are significant differences between them. When the Rambam discusses, for example, in Perek Yud Aleph of Hilchos Brachos, the need to recite a bracha on various mitzvahs, the Rambam writes that a bracha is limited to a mitzvah ben adam l'makom, a ritual. You don't find, the Rambam writes, mitzvahs ben adam l'chavero that have a particular bracha. And therefore the Rambam writes, on the mitzvah of tzedakah there is no bracha, on bikur cholim, on nichum aveilim, on priyasacho, achnasas arachim, you never find a birchas hamitzvah in that sense. And the Rambam writes it's because that brachos, an interesting novelty that the Rambam emphasizes, are relegated to mitzvos that are ben adam lemakom. Even, for example, what the Gemara raises in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chav Ches, you know, the sugya of mitzvos tzrichos kavana. Whenever a person engages in a mitzvah, of course one's mindset should be that I am fulfilling the ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I am fulfilling a Torah obligation. And what happens if a person performs a mitzvah by rote and doesn't realize necessarily that he's doing so because this is an absolute imperative? Does he fulfill the mitzvah? Does he not fulfill the mitzvah? This is a machlokas in the very end of Psochim, a machlokas Rabbi Yossi Nechachamim, a machlokas Rosh Hashanah Chavches, between Rabbi and Rab Zeira, mitzvos tzrichos or mitzvos ein tzrichos kavana. Ideally, one's mindset is critical, but minimally, do you fulfill a mitzvah without? I eat matzah, and I didn't realize at the time that I'm doing so because there is a mitzvah of berav toch l'matzah. So I hear shofar, but somehow it doesn't register that there is a mitzvah of yom tshua yelachem. So therefore, a significant debate, a machlokes rishonim, the mechaber and simon samach and achos kriyashma, writes that we assume that mitzvos tzrichos kavana. The kavana is considered to be quite critical. But you know, a fascinating observation, when you look throughout every sugya throughout Shas of mitzvos trichos kavana, it is all referring to ritual. Mitzvos that are ben adam l'makom, whether it's matzah or maror or shofar. What about when it comes to mitzvos that are ben adam l'chavero, interpersonal relationships? A person performs a very great chesed, but you know, he doesn't realize necessarily at the time that I'm doing so because there's a mitzvah of nichum aveilim, bikur cholim, kvuras hameis. Would you argue that his act is meaningless? Or would you say that no, nonetheless, certainly the person has performed a great sense of chesed? And this is what you find in Klei Chemda, the very end of Parshas Kisetze, that it's not coincidental that every example throughout the Gemara is always mitzvos ben adam l'makom. Because there I could realize that ritual without intent is not considered to be the fulfillment of a mitzvah. However, when it comes to obligations ben adam l'chavero, then we do in fact assume that one would fulfill the mitzvah even if a person did not realize at the time that he's doing so, because the Torah mandates that I have to perform this act, because undeniably, even if I didn't have that mindset, but he was the beneficiary of my chesed, the ani received the tzedakah, even if I didn't have that in mind expressly at the moment, and in such a case, I in fact am yotze. You know, the Rambam even writes in Hilchos Tshuva two differences between a mitzvah ben adam l'makom, an obligation ben adam l'chavero. One is simply how tshuva is done. Mitzvos that are ben adam l'makom, that's between myself and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if I wrong a fellow individual, tshuva requires ad shiratze es chavero, that a person has to go over to that other individual and ask him for mechila, for forgiveness. And then the Rambam writes a further difference. Let's say a person commits a chait. When do we tell that person, you know, keep that chait private? It's no one else's business. When do we assume that no, mechasa pisha'av lo yatzliach, as the pasuk says, if a person hides his acts, he will never be successful? The Rambam writes, it depends. If it's a mitzvah ben adam l'makom, that is something that is quite private. When it comes to a mitzvah ben adam l'chavero, there the Rambam writes that even the tshuva process should be a more public manifestation as well. So you know, there are many differences between obligations ben adam l'makom mitzvos ben adam lechavero. The Ramban does emphasize, even though they are forged on two different luchos, but the two luchos are combined as one, because to be a complete Jew, these domains are inseparable. You can't be a Jew who emphasizes merely ben adam lemakom, or a person who simply is active only in ben adam lechavero, as the Rambam writes, and therefore it's necessary to realize they are distinct, but at the same time, both are absolutely necessary to be able to paint the entire picture of a true Eved Hashem. And certain mitzvos, you know, it's somewhat unclear. What exactly is the nature of the mitzvah? Kibud av v'em is mentioned, both elements. Not long ago I gave a shiur in Los Angeles. They asked me to speak about environmentalism. It was in LA, so that was the theme on everyone's mind. So in such a case, I began with this preamble that this Rav Bal Tashchis, the need to go in and to preserve a certain sense of the natural order that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. Is that ben Adam lechavero? Is that ben Adam lemakom? If a person were to go ahead and wreak havoc in society, is it merely that I am wronging my fellow man? Or does it mean that no, as the Midrash writes, that at the time of creation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Adam HaRishon a tour of all the sights of the world. And the tour concluded with Kadosh Baruch Hu telling Adam HaRishon that you should realize that this gift is conditional, that you act responsibly, shelo tachriv esolami, that you don't destroy this world. You have to be productive. You can't simply be wasteful with all the gifts HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given. And even therefore, when it comes to how we treat not only others, but treating an environment as well, elements that are ben adam lechaveru, elements which are ben adam lemakom as well. And this, I would suggest, is a fitting hakdama to lifnei iver lo sitin mechshol. The Torah tells us that, literally speaking, a person cannot place a stumbling block in front of one who is blind. And even though that is the depiction that the Torah gives, in a very literal sense, causing a person to stumble and fall, but as you know, the Gemara of Avodah Zarah and Davav expands lifnei iver in the realm of mitzvos and averos as well, causing a Jew or even causing a non-Jew to sin as well. A person, the Gemara's case is, he's a Nazir. And wine is forbidden to him, but it's inaccessible. It's out of reach. He's on the other side of the riverbank. And therefore, that as much as he desires a stiff drink, there's no way that he could access. And I go ahead and I toss in the bottle and he drinks. In such a case, he breaches his Nazirus, but I violate the Isser as being a facilitator of lifnei iver lo sitin mechshol. And the Gemara, it's the same thing applies even when it comes to a non-Jew as well. The answer the Gemara gives is a case of eiver min hachai, that a non-Jew is not allowed to go ahead and to eat of a limb that was ripped off of a live animal, and if I provide that to the non-Jew, he will violate his transgression, but I will also violate this rav lifnei iver lo sitin mechshol. So therefore, both in the realm of mitzvos, averos, Jew and not Jew, one cannot provoke, one can be a facilitator in terms of violating the mitzvos Hashem. But then if you look in Toras Kohanim, another example, a person who gives ill advice, an etza ra, a person wants to know, should I invest? Should I not invest? I have to make a career decision. I'm at a crossroads in life. And I go ahead and consciously give the person what I know is inappropriate advice. The Gemara that also is considered to be a lifnei iver lo sitin mechshol. So therefore, two halves that you find throughout the Gemara and in the Medrash and the Toras Kohanim in the realm of mitzvah and avera, but also simply in terms of advising a person against what I know is in his best interest. You know, ill advice, that sounds like an interpersonal prohibition of lifnei iver lo sitin mechshol. And what about mitzvos and averos? See, here one could argue one of two ways. Maybe one could argue that what greater example or manifestation of ill advice than telling a person to violate a Torah prohibition? Ill advice is not telling him don't invest, or yes, do in fact invest, but ill advice also is telling him that, you know, I encourage you to transgress Shabbos or to eat something which is not kosher, but also is considered to be ill advice. Or maybe one could argue that no, when it comes to the realm of mitzvos and averos, the fact that I am the provider, I am the facilitator, it's as though that I have a hand. It's as though that I'm partnering in this act of avera itself. when we look back and we attribute this act of Avera, the attribution is not merely to the one who committed the Avera, but then we have to ask, then how did this happen? And if the answer is because you provoked, you caused, you facilitated, so in such a case, you have a hand in that Avera as well. It's not merely simply ill advice, but rather, in a real halachic sense, it's as though that you are a partner, you're a shutaf in that act of Avera itself. You know, there's a fascinating comment that the Balamor discusses, Sanhedrin Daf Ayin Dalid, and that is as follows. Let's assume, for example, I provoke one person to violate prohibition A, another person to violate prohibition B, I provoke him to eat something that's not kosher, I provoke another person to be Mechalel Shabbos. Is it all the same prohibition of Lifnei Iver? Is inappropriate provocation? Or we want to argue an interesting possibility that Lifnei Iver takes on the characteristics of the Avera in hand. My provoking B to Mechalel Shabbos is much worse than provoking A not to put on tefillin, because Shabbos is more stringent. Shabbos is an Isselos Saseh, a Chiyuv Kare, Skila, tefillin is a Mitzvah Saseh, so the severity of the Lifnei Iver really depends on the Avera at hand. And that's the view of the Balamor. The Lifnei Iver is not just simply a broad application of inappropriate advice, but rather it takes on the characteristics of the Avera at hand, as though that I become a partner, a player in that act of the Avera. True, he shouldn't have necessarily have done so. He shouldn't have listened to me. That is the case. But nonetheless, it doesn't necessarily mean that I am innocent of any measure of guilt at all. You know, it's somewhat unclear from the Gemara. I'll give you the following example. Don't place a stumbling block in front of some who is blind. I go ahead and I place that stumbling block, and all of a sudden the blind person walks around it. And I go ahead and place the stumbling block again, and somehow he keeps on circumventing this, sir. I do my best to provoke a person to eat something that's not kosher, Rachman Litzlan, not to observe Shabbos, and somehow I'm not successful in that what I do. The person somehow always skirts the Avera itself. Would you call that a prohibition of Lifnei Iver, or would you not? See, if, for example, the Isser is what we call Simas Mechshol, just simply placement of an obstacle, Lifnei Iver lo Sitei Mechshol, placing a stumbling block, the Isser is provocation. One could argue the inappropriateness of provoking, irrespective of whether the person falls for the bait or whether he does not. Or maybe one could argue, no, it means that when an Avera is committed, we take a step back and we ask ourselves that, who caused this? And the answer is, if there is an Avera, then you know, you had a hand in this as well. But maybe Lifnei Iver requires that there has to be some sense of an Avera. Without an Avera, there's no Lifnei Iver. If Lifnei Iver means that I'm a partner in that particular act, the starting point is some transgression was violated. And without that, there wouldn't necessarily be an act of Lifnei Iver. So this is not so clear in the Gemara. Whether you violate Lifnei Iver provocation for the attempt, or no, only if the bottom line is that an Avera is committed, then we can take a step back and attribute that act not only to the player, but even to the provoker as well. You know, that example that I mentioned to you in Avodah Zarah and Daf Vav Amud Beis, I go ahead and I see that there's this Nazir, and this Nazir really wants wine, but he's on the other side of that riverbank, it's absolutely out of reach. And I go ahead and I toss him that bottle. And what happens if somehow at the end of the day, the Nazir just simply doesn't drink? The bottle is there, but somehow, no, I'm not going to breach my commitment of Nazirus, and therefore I will not partake of this wine. So an interesting possibility. Do you invite Lifnei Iver by simply providing, or no, only if in fact the Nazir will drink, then you violate Lifnei Iver lo Sitei Mechshol. So if you look, for example, in the Chazon Ish, in Siman Samech Beis, the Chazon Ish writes, only if there is an Avera. Once there is an Avera, you can attribute it to the provider. But without an Avera, there is no prohibition of Lifnei Iver. And Rav Chaim Ozer and Achiezer Chelek Gimel Siman Samech Hei disagrees and maintains that is not true. The provocation alone is considered to be that which is forbidden? A fascinating possibility. Is it the act of provoking, or does it mean only when an avera is done? You know, I would suggest the following. Let's assume, for example, I toss the wine to that nazir on the other side of the riverbank, and he drinks. What prohibition does he violate by drinking that wine? Well, you'll tell me he violates his nazirus. As a nazir, he's not allowed to drink wine. Absolutely true. He violates nazirus. But I would suggest that the Kurna Chazanishi violates another prohibition as well, that by drinking, he has caused me to violate the Isra Lif Na'ivir. So in such a case, by doing so, a twofold Isra. Now, the Yasyayin, also, if he wouldn't drink, then I would be okay. Now that he drinks, so now I violate Lif Na'ivir. Tosus writes, there is. Tosus Nevodazar and Daptezvav, there's a Lif Na'ivir of Lif Na'ivir. Now, and therefore, provocation has many tiers, many interesting layers. You know, you may think that somehow, how often does this come up? You know, I throw wine to a nazir, I give aver menachai, right, to a non-Jew. You know, if you'd ask your Morad Asra, how many times did he have such a shaila, am I allowed to give aver menachai to the non-Jew? Not so often. But the Gemara in Kedushin Daf Lamed Beis, the Gemara tells us a stunning story. The Gemara writes that Rav Huna had a son, Rabba, and Rav Huna wanted to test his son to see his character. You know, was he impulsive? Did he get angry? Was he able to be somewhat calm? So he took something that was very dear to his son Rabba, and he ripped it in his presence. B'kol shirai ba'apei. He ripped it in his presence. The Gemara writes, how was Rav Huna able to go ahead and do so? After all, the Dilma Rosach, that maybe the son would have become angered at the father, and the ka'avar alifnei iver lo sitei mechshol, and the father would have violated lifnei iver by doing so. You know, based on the two ways that we discussed, what exactly does the Gemara mean? Now, that what parent baited the child? The Gemara says, dilma rasach, maybe the child would become angry, and the ka'avar alifnei iver lo sitei mechshol. Does it mean that if and only if the child would have become angry, and he would have done something inappropriate to his father. He would have yelled at his father, Rachman Litzlan, he would have hit his father, then the father would have violated the Ifneiver? Or does it mean, no, the mere tempt, the fact that the child was provoked, that alone, Reb Chaim Ozer writes, the Gemara doesn't mean if and only if. The fact that that is a distinct possibility, in such a case, the Dilma Rasach, and therefore immediately, regardless of the response, but that's an illustration the Gemara writes. It's pretty incredible. Now, a parent goes ahead and kind of baits a child. Now, a Rebbe, a teacher, kind of teases the child, and the child responds. The child responds inappropriately. The child will violate the prohibition by doing so. Maybe that's a breach of kibud aveim, you know, but you know what? The parent violates lifnei lo sitei mechshol. No, it's not only the child who bears a certain measure of guilt, as the Gemara writes. One has to be so careful. Now, sometimes, you know, we're all guilty of kind of baiting a little bit. Now, whether it's a child, whether it's a fellow man, whether in the position of being a teacher, a student, and maybe they act inappropriately. No excuse, but you know, you're not innocent of that interaction. V'dumar asach. Lifnever is not only in the realm of Aver Menachai and giving wine to the Nazir, but even in terms of day-to-day occurrences, to see to it that one is very, very careful in terms of those types of relationships, in order to see to it that one does not facilitate in any shape or form that type of consequence. So therefore, one always has to be careful. Sometimes a partner in the act of aver itself, and other times, very simply, that lifneiver in the broadest sense, that it's ill advice, that you're not doing that which is necessarily in the best interest of that other person's individual. So the Gemara raises that kasha, that Rav Huna really went ahead and did that to his son Rabba. That how was it possible? After all, if Rabba would have responded, so that would have been a terrible breach of kibud aveim. So the Gemara answers that Rav Huna was mochel, any aspect of Kibud Av V'Aim. He wanted to test the disposition, the character of his son. He realized his son may act inappropriately, so therefore his mindset was, I completely forgive him if he does anything that is inappropriate. That's what the Gemara writes. Tosus goes a step further. Tosus raises an unbelievable kashya. You know, the Torah tells us, let's assume, for example, a woman makes a neder, and the husband goes ahead and overrules that particular neder. But the woman was unaware of that. From her perspective, from her mindset, she thought that this was considered to be forbidden. And she went ahead and violated the neder. But you know, it turns out, no, the neder was not binding because there was hafara sabal. The neder was already paka. The neder was completely absolved, completely removed in such an instance. Good, but yet the Torah tells us, v'Hashem yislach lo. That woman needs atonement. She needs kapara. She didn't do anything wrong technically. She didn't breach the neder because the neder didn't exist. It was already out. But nonetheless, the mindset was machshava sachet. You know, the Gemara tells us when Rabbi Akiva used to read that pasuk, v'Hashem yislach lo, Rabbi Akiva would cry. You know, Rabbi Akiva was an amazing, amazing personality of the Tanaim. You know, we're so used to, you know, Maseches Makkos is a relatively short Masechta, no? So if you have to make a siyum, it's a nice Masechta to choose. You know, and the very last daf, Chav Dalet, Maseches Makkos describes, Rabbi Akiva sees the Churban Habayis, and as you know, what is the response? V'hoyer Rabbi Akiva Mitzachek. Rabbi Akiva laughed at the Churban Habayis. This is Ischalta de Gelula. No, this is the beginning of redemption. Yerushalmi writes, when Rabbi Akiva was put to death, V'hoyer Rabbi Akiva Mitzachek. Rabbi Akiva was able to laugh at that experience, serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chol nafshecha. Now, being able to be Moser Nefesh. Churban Habayis, personal suffering, Rabbi Akiva laughs. And Rabbi Akiva comes to the pasuk of Hashem Yislach Lo, and Rabbi Akiva starts breaking down and crying. Now, it's an unusual personality. You know, we don't laugh when Rabbi Akiva laughs. We don't cry when Rabbi Akiva... We read the pasuk Hashem Yislach Lo, flies by. Now, we see, we experience a certain sense of everything, a suffering, we cry. Such emunah bitochen of a Kadosh Baruch Hu gives Rabbi a different vision entirely, now, that to be able to see geula in Sara, and yet even a thought in Avera, that evokes tears in Rabbi Akiva. That pasuk of v'Hashem yislach lo. So therefore, there's a concept of machshava sachet. Machshava sachet. If a person attempts to do something which is wrong, even if it then turns out that somehow they're not successful in doing so, but nonetheless, that requires tshuva. So Tosus raises exactly that issue. They're good. Rav Huna was mochel his son Rabba. But was Rabba aware of that? Was Rabba aware that his son did so? Not necessarily. Rabba wasn't aware that Rav Huna was mochel. So therefore, that again is considered to lifnei iver. Now, Lifnei Iver of Machshava Sachet. We're used to Lifnei Iver of a Chet. Now, don't provoke a person that he should have a thought of doing something which is wrong. You know what Tosfos answers? That Rav Huna told Rabbi he was Mochem. Because if Rabbi was unaware, that also is considered to be Lifnei Iver. You know, the test wasn't such a significant test if the father said to the son of Mochem, but no. Rav Huna wanted to see what his knee-jerk reaction was. No, how impulsive was he? And therefore, what was the immediate intuitive response when such a thing would indeed occur? And therefore, exactly on that level, that was considered to be a test in Yisayon. But that's pretty amazing. No, lifnei iver av amachshava sachet. Amachshava sachet. Fascinating possibility. If you look in the Tshuvos of Shlomo Zalman Arbach, Mincha Shlomo, Simon, Lamed Hei, Rosh Shlomo Zalman quotes this Tosus and writes two very fascinating applications, just for illustration, to see, right, the intensity and the meticulousness that sometimes is in fact necessary. Rosh Shlomo writes the following. Let's assume, for example, you know, a woman is alone in her house. And all of a sudden, let's say, a worker comes to the door. You know, there's certain potential issues of Yichud. Is it really appropriate that the worker should enter the house and now the door is closed and the only ones that are secure in the house is that the woman of the house together with this worker? So one has to, you know, work out issues of Yichud even when people come simply to do work in one's home. So Shlomo Zalman writes the following. So the Jewish worker shows up and he wants to do work in the house. the woman of the house knows there's no yichud, because after all, my husband is right next door, Bala Be'ir. My husband is in the shul, he's learning, he's attending the shir, he's a few blocks away. No yichud under such a condition. Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes, that's fine and good, but what about from the perspective of the worker? Does the worker know that the husband is sitting in the shul a few blocks away, going to a shir or learning, he can come home at every minute? Not necessarily. So Shlomo Zalman writes an interesting chiddush, and that is that she has to tell him that my husband is nearby and there's no issur of yichud. Because even though that technically there isn't, but does he know? It, from his perspective, is that true? I'll answer, yeah, but it's not a transgression. There's no yichud. That's true, but v'ashem yislacha. Alifnei iverav. A machshava sachet. Or Shlomo Zalman writes, pretty common, let's say in Eretz Yisrael, a person could have a restaurant, and let's assume, for example, I know everything is absolutely kosher, but for some reason the teudah is not being displayed properly. And therefore, unless you really know, to walk into the restaurant and start eating without even making sure that it's a kosher facility, right, that would be an inappropriate thing to do. Now a person has to see, is it really under a reliable hechsher? The proprietor knows, of course, it's a reliable hechsher. But that's not enough, because if I will allow him simply to go to enter and eat without due diligence of finding out, even if everything is kosher, but isn't that lifnei iverav? That's what Shlomo Zalman writes. Lifneiver, not only in terms of actual chayt, but based on that Gemara, even a breach simply of meticulousness, even that itself is considered to be a lifneiver. So again, it's something to sensitize ourselves toward parenting, interpersonal relationships. The fact that if I do anything to elicit an inappropriate response, realize how careful a person has to be. I think all of us as parents will admit on a good day that sometimes we can speak harshly to a child and the child can go ahead and answer in return, and not appropriate, not excusable, but you know, we bear some of that guilt when that type of interaction, when that exchange occurs. That's what the Gemara writes in Kedushin and Daf Lamed Beis. I'll give you an interesting example. You know, sometimes maybe there can be something which objectively doesn't seem to be appropriate, maybe an element of an avera. But I will tell you that, you know, under such circumstances, maybe it's justifiable. Maybe it's justifiable. Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes in that same siman, Lamed Hey, I have, for example, Jews who I invite to my home. And I know this is not a religious Jew. He's not going to be reciting a bracha if I offer him food. And, you know, technically speaking, the Shulchan Aruch writes, obviously, that you can't eat without reciting a bracha. But Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes, what's the choice? What's plan B? So plan B could be, you know what, I will decide I will never invite any non-religious Jew to my home because of fear that they won't recite a bracha rishona, or won't recite a bracha achrona. That certainly seems inappropriate. Or, for example, I'll invite them in and I'll tell them, I'll try to tell them in a nice way, but I'll tell them, you know what, you're welcome to eat, but you have to recite a bracha rishona, you have to recite a bracha achrona, and probably they'll leave the house with the feeling of, you know, okay, I've done this, and never again am I going to, you know, put myself in such a situation. So Shlomo Zalman writes that, look, when you're dealing with a lifnei iver, a person really has to be able to assess that, is this really, in the broader scheme, is this really a mechshel? Can I honestly say that inviting someone to my home and being gracious and showing them religious way of life, that is a mechshel, that is a stumbling block? And even if, right here and now, it means that they might be eating without a bracha, but perhaps one can take a step back and have a more panoramic vision in order to realize that, you know, there's what to be gained by doing so, and the other option could be far worse if the option is so therefore fine. No invitation, no interaction, or that I will only go ahead and invite if I'm confident that they will go ahead and do A, B, C, and D. If that will breed a sense of Sinas Yisrael, Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes, that's far worse than one's eating without a bracha. And therefore, Shlomo Zalman writes, one could be justified in that sense of being gracious, being hospitable, because after all, one has to have a broader vision. I would encourage you, you have to ask Shailas Tirmara Dasra, how do you apply this principle? Inviting someone to the house for Shabbos, where it means that there'll be Machalos Shabbos to come with the hope that that will have some long-lasting impact, right? Where do you draw the line in terms of balance? One always has to ask that type of Shaila. You know, the Gemara often tells us, that sometimes we assume that the end can justify certain means that, typically speaking, we would not grant license to. But a person always has to know, when you apply that principle, when do we really argue that what potentially is gained far outweighs what is immediately lost, and therefore you have a right to go ahead and to make that balance. But in principle, Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes, there is much merit to the argument that how can you call this a stumbling block when my mindset, my intent, and very often the reality, we've all seen a great fruit of our labor of somehow accepting a person as he is right now with the hope that he will grow and be more observant, and lo and behold, right, that happens. But I caution, right, that's something you always have to ask your Maradasra in terms of what is and is not the appropriate balance of. The Gemara has a fascinating term, in Aveira Lishma. Doing something that sounds wrong, but doing it for the right reason. We're used to mitzvos lishma, Gemara, and aveira lishma. Now, you can do aveiras for the right reason as well, as long as it's licensed and as long as the correct shaila is posed. So when Shlomo Zalman writes this, he tells you, Ayin Rabbi Kiveger, Yerodea Kuf Pei Aleph. Take a look in Rabbi Kiveger, Yerodea Kuf Pei Aleph. Rabbi Kiveger writes something amazing. It's a little bit technical, but it's worth going through. The Gemara tells us in Makos and Davchav that, let's assume, for example, a person takes a razor and he cuts the Peyas HaRosh. So the Gemara tells us that that individual would violate two Torah prohibitions. After all, the Torah tells us lo sakifu in the plural, echad hamakif ve echad hanikaf loke. There's malchus for a person who cuts. I didn't cut my payas, I cut your payas. And there's also in iser and malchus for the one whose payas are removed. The makif, the one who cuts, and the nikaf, the one who is the object of the akafa. And that's why the Torah tells us in the plural, lo sakifu, echad hamakif ve echad hanikaf loke. Good. So if a man will go ahead and cut the payas of another man, in such a case, the one who cuts violates the isra of makif, the one whose payas is removed, he violates the isra of nikah. Lo sakifu, echad hamakif ve echad hanikaf loke. What happens if the one who cuts is a woman? That's what the Gemara discusses as well, a woman. Well, a woman is not really included in makif and nikah, because if a person has a beard, if a person has peyas harosh, peyas hazakan, they're included in this rav, makif and nikah. But a woman is excluded. A woman is not obligated in makif, a woman is not obligated in nikah. Does that mean that a woman can go ahead and cut the peyas of a fellow Jew? So the answer would be is that, you know, I'm not going to go to this Jew, because I'll go to, right, not the Jewish man, I'll go to the Jewish woman and allow her to go ahead and cut the payas, and that's fine. No. After all, to have your payas cut is an isser of nikaf. And what about the woman? So you're right. That's not an isser of makif, because she's excluded, but isn't it a form of lifneiver? Isn't it a form of lifneiver? Because as a result of her cutting, the one who is the object of the hakafa violates the isra of nikaf. Good? So therefore, bottom line is that a woman cannot cut the payas of a man, because even if technically speaking she is exempt, but that's a lifnei iver of nikaf. Good? So that's clear. That's what the Shulchan Aruch writes in Kuf Pei Aleph, that a man cannot cut the payas of a fellow man, a woman cannot cut the payas of a fellow man. After all, that's an issa. Someone calls you and says to you the following, that, you know, I'm a caregiver in a hospital, in a nursing home. You know, part of my job description, part of my responsibility simply is to take care of the physical needs of this patient that involves shaving that patient as well. So what exactly do I do? So the man picks, and he's the one who calls you, right? He picks up the phone and dials and he asks you, what do I do? So you're going to tell him, look, you can't do this. The Gemara writes in Makos and Daf Chav that there's an isser of makif, there's an isser of nikaf, you're not allowed to go ahead and do so. So therefore, you tell them that, look, you have to explain to your employer that you're not allowed to do this, this cannot be your act, whatever, some other arrangement has to in fact be made. Okay. The phone rings again. The caregiver calls. It's a woman. And she says, you know, that part of my job description is to go ahead and to shave, take care of the physical needs of this patient. Am I allowed to go ahead and to cut the payas harosh? So you're going to say, no, you can't. She'll say, yep, doesn't the Gemara Makos say that I'm exempt from makif nikaf? You'll answer, sure, you're exempt, but leave nei there. By what you're doing, you're causing him to violate this sort of nikaf. Okay. Then she says to you the following, no problem. The patient's a very nice person who really doesn't want to get me in trouble. So you know what? If I tell the patient, I can't do this, the Jewish, you know, he's going to say, no problem, don't do it, we won't tell, I'll do it myself. You don't have to do it. I'll take care of that. That's Rav Ikiv Eiger. He'll do it himself. If he does it himself, he violates the Isser of Makif and the Isser of Nikaf. And if she will go ahead and do it for him, so in such a case now he only violates the Isser of Nikaf. You're going to say that's called lifneiver. No, the sum game. By doing this, by removing his payas, I've saved him from violating a Torah prohibition. No? If option B is that two isurim, and option A is only one, that's called a mechshol. That's Rav Ikiv Eiger writes. No? That's Rav Shlomo Zalman writes. Ayin Rav Ikiv Eiger, Yerodea Kuf Pei Aleph. No? Now, how can you call that the simas mechshol? Right? If a man does it, it's a blatant Torah prohibition. A man cannot do so. But if the woman does so, technically not. It's only a question of lifneiver. How can you call lifneiver if I am saving a person from violating a prohibition? That's a stunning, stunning argument. No? In other words, is there any license to say, look, I realize the person is doing something wrong. I realize that perhaps he will be driving too. But you know what? What's the other option? What's the other option if we say no? So a person will be violating multiple Isurim. A person will be Mechalel Shabbos 100 times through the course of the Shabbos. Is there any legitimacy to argument that yes, there is something that here that under certain conditions would be called a mirshal, but in the sum game that the aver is being reduced as opposed to increased? That's the hara of Rav Ikiv Eiger in Yerodea Kuf Pei Aleph. No, it requires, right, a true shailas chacham, where to draw the line, but it's a fascinating possibility that the same act sometimes could be called an avera of lifneiver. Sometimes the same act can be something which is not that way at all. Well, whenever it comes to these areas, lifneiver, as I mentioned, the element of ben adam lechavero, you know, all of this stems from a certain conviction that we have so clear at Mamet Har Sinai that ishechad b'lev echad, that we realize that all of Knesset Yisrael is considered to be literally guf echad, a single entity. And you know, if I cause someone else to sin, that is not his avera, but that is something that clearly relates to myself as well. With the profound belief, the language of the Ritva is found in Rosh Hashanah Chavtes, the Ritva is found in Hilchos Brachos, in Perek Hei Halacha Aleph, all of Knesset Yisrael is considered to be guf echad, a single unit, a single entity. You know, there's an amazing comment that Tosfos has. It's worth seeing. This Tosfos is in Menachos, Daf Lamed Zayin Amar Aleph. And in the Gemara Menachos, on the margin, there's a Shita Mekubetzes. So Tosfos Menachos Lamed Zayin, Shita Mekubetzes, Os Yurches. But take a look. You might find this is useful if you have to speak about Achdus and the Tzibur to mention this Tosfos. Tosfos writes the following. A din Torah involving Shlomo Melech. Shlomo Melech, the Chacham Mikol Adam. No? A din Torah of Shlomo Melech. You know, Shlomo Melech had on his slate that he has to try a particular case of inheritance, of Yerusha. Now, how complicated could the Shaila be? You know, the Dina Yerusha, that's fairly clear, right? Who is the Yoresh, who is not? You know, Shlomo Melech probably thought that this isn't going to be such a difficult din Torah. All of a sudden, the family walks in, right, one after another. Maisa Shahaya, Tosus writes, this happened. Right, the son walks in with two heads. Oh, a Siamese twin walks in. The Siamese twin demands Pishnayim. He's entitled to two shares. and all the other brothers say, come on, you're one brother, you're one guy, this is it, you're entitled to one share like we are, you're not entitled to a double form of Yusha. So Shlomo somehow has to consider, you know, how do you understand this? One goof, two different goof, how do you paskin this particular shayla? You know, one of Rav Moshe's such challenging shaylas, right? The doctors were separating Siamese twins, knowing very well both would not survive. One would survive, one would die. How do you kind of make that decision in terms of what to do, what not to do? One is a rodef, one is called pursuing the life of the other, but how do you make that determination? Which is the rodef and which is the nirdaf, which is the one who is threatening and which is the victim? No, it's just a simple thing. But Tosfos already writes, what is the status of this Siamese twin? Is it one, is it two? So, Tosfos writes, Tosfos doesn't tell us how Shlomo Melech knew this. You know, you look through the Gemara, it's not so simple. But Shlomo Melech paskin guf echad, he's only entitled to one share. That's what Tosfos writes. That was the psak of Shlomo Melech. You know, Tosfos doesn't tell us, again, how he came to that conclusion. So for that, you have to look on the side in the Shita Mekubetzes, Os Yud Ches. How in the world did Shlomo Melech know that this is guf echad? So the Shita Mekubetzes writes that, you know, there wasn't any pasuk, there wasn't any explicit Gemara or anything that Shlomo Melech could really point to in our Mesorah, in our history. Shlomo Melech had to do an empirical test to see whether it's guf echad or whether it's shnei gufim. So Tosfos writes, no, Shita Mekubetzes, that Shlomo Melech took a sack and covered one head and took a little bit of hot water and poured it over the second half and took a step back and saw who would respond, who would scream out in the pain of that hot water, right, being placed to the head. Shlomo did that. And the head that was covered with the sack, lo and behold, screamed out. And Shlomo paskin, the guf echad. That's the Shita Mekubetzes writes. That was the test of Shlomo. The ability of one to feel the suffering of another, that is the test of whether guf echad, or whether it's considered to be shnei guf. That was the psak of Shlomo Melech. If somehow one could feel pain and the other would not respond, Shlomo Melech would paskin. Shnei gufim, you're entitled to pishnayim. But given that reality, that one could scream out in the pain at an experience of another, that's not another. That's considered to be that which is guf echad. That's the Shita Mekubetzes. Menachos and Daf Lamed Zayin. It's an important Musar Haskel. To be able to realize, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Teshuva that all of Klal Yisrael are guf echad, and a person has to be willing to celebrate in the simcha of a fellow Jew, to be able to empathize with the suffering of a member of Knesset Yisrael, to the point that this is a first-hand experience. This is not just simply something we relate to in an indirect fashion, because all of Knesset Yisrael, to use the language of the Ritva, are literally considered to be a single unit, guf echad, ki ish echad, b'lev echad. And therefore, when it comes to especially, mitzvos in general, but certainly interpersonal relationships, you know, the secret of that Gemara in Kedushin Daf Lamed Beis, parenting, sometimes that could be lifnei iver, inappropriate parenting. You know what the secret is to successful teaching, successful parenting, to be able to do so by example, not simply by instruction, to tell others, to tell our children, to tell our students, this is what you have to do, but rather to embody, to personify that quality, that trait. If our children are brought up in such a home that is conducive toward such the acts of chesed, so therefore, that is the best teacher. And Rachmana Litzlan, if not, that's a form of a leaf neiver, in the sense that the children will continue and simply follow the practice that they're used to. There's a fascinating chizkuni. I'll conclude with this. It's found in Parshas Baloska. This I want you to see also, because this chizkuni is stunning. And not that I have to give you license, but use this. Use this at any simcha. No, it's relevant for any experience that you have. The chizkuni writes the following. You know, Avod and Beis Hamikdash. Shevet Levi. Chizkuni raises the following issue. Why a shevet? Why did it have to be a shevet? You know, wouldn't it have been more appropriate, which originally was a possibility, let's let the Bechor, a firstborn, do avod in the Beis HaMikdash. After all, if it's a Bechor, you know, we're used to a more democratic perspective. No, let every family have a representative in the Mikdash Hashem. Well, why does it have to be that one Shevet? What's the advantage of the Shevet system over the Bechor system? That is what troubles the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni writes the following answer. Imagine if the Bechor does avoda, not a Shevet. So imagine, hard to know which is worse. Imagine a father is a Bechor and his son is not. And the father goes off to do avoda Beis HaMikdash and he has to leave, right, his child behind. Or imagine a child is a Bechor, and the child turns to the father and says, can you show me how to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the father has to say, you know what, this is not a mitzvah that I share. I really can't show you by example at all. This is something that you have to learn elsewhere. You have to go, right, to the Beis HaMikdash and learn this not by my example, but learn this, right, in a different venue, in a different type of forum. The Chizkuni writes, the Torah insists, that we have to model. We have to teach Avodas Hashem by example. And that cannot be the case if you have a Bechor system. If you have a Shevet system, so in such a case, you know, a mitzvah that a mother has is shared by the daughter, a mitzvah of the father is shared by the son, then the father and the son can go together in order to engage in Avod in the Mikdash Hashem. And therefore the Torah assures that proper chinuch and proper hashpah, the ability to be able to influence others, as important as and vital as instruction is, it can never substitute for that sense of a hands-on model and example to be able to tell them, come with me, follow my lead, achrei Hashem Elokeichem teleichu, and let us serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu together. That is part of, no doubt, what underlies, right, these prohibitions of lifnei iver, misayela, ove avera, the ability to be able to see family, to be able to see community, to see every member of Knesset Yisrael as an extension of ourselves, literally as though it's guf echad, and therefore to be able to relate to everyone in that sense. Bezras Hashem, we should be zoche to, right, that lofty ideal. You know, the Gemara tells us that there are many averos HaKadosh Baruch Hu will simply excuse. But when it comes to the destruction of Second Beis HaMikdash and Sinas Chinam, right, it's something that we suffer from, no doubt, even today. And as much as we've made strides in so many areas of instruction, in the Torah network that we have, which is almost unparalleled, in terms of the Harbatzas HaTorah, in the Talmud Torah that exists in our day and age, but nonetheless, there's a lot to be said for the ability to be able to see to it that Knesset Yisrael unites as one. Bezras Hashem, we should be zochet to be able to emphasize both elements of the luchos. The first half, the mitzvos that are ben adon l'makom, and the latter half, the mitzvos that are ben adon l'chavero, because even though they are distinct with differences, l'halacha, but nonetheless, as the Ramban writes, they're really inseparable. It's a single luach. Rashi writes in Chumash, the word luchos is spelt without a vav. Luchas ksiv. In order to emphasize that one has to embrace both in order to be a proper Oved Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give each one of you the Beis HaKnesses, the entire Kehillah, that sense of Siyata Dishmaya, to be able to grow not only in areas Ben Adon L'makom, but to be able to excel in mitzvos Ben Adon L'chavero as well.
If there are any questions.
Two questions. You stated the day of the Baal Hamor. There's a clarification of that. You're saying that he has said that the condition is that improving induces a shimon to be over an Easter Kores, and that the one who is in Kores, is it over on the
main? Right. So the Baal Hamor doesn't go that far. The Baal Hamor is mentioned. It's found in Avodah Zarah, Daf Ayin Dalet, where the Baal Hamor writes, Lifnei Iver, takes on some of the characteristics of the aver at hand. The context of the Baal HaMor is Yehareg Vayavur. That's the sugya in Sanhedrin Daf Ayin Dalet. So the Baal HaMor writes, if a person will go ahead and say to you, provoke this person to commit an act of murder, or to violate arayos, or to violate avodah zarah, even if your life is a threat, lifnei iver of yehareg vayavur is yehareg vayavur. That's the position of the Baal HaMor. So the Baal HaMor would not necessarily argue the onish is exactly the same, so there isn't kares, there isn't misa, but nonetheless, to the extent that it's called an isra avodah zarah, that's the chiddush that the Baal HaMor writes.
The other question is, as far as the onish for generally, the situation of the Yibam and the Chai or the Kosyan and those are, is there a difference between if you actually give, fill a cup of wine and say, here, that Kibbutz Chaim, you know, here's a coastal vine, or you just give from an Ainsa, go have yourself a glass of wine. Because in one case, in actual, would the person who was over, be Chai of Malchus, and the other, since the Lav Shaim of Maisa is giving him a verbal advice, not. What's the answer to that?
Right. That's a good question. We assume in both cases there isn't malchus. There certainly isn't malchus if a person just gives advice, because as you mentioned, dibur, it's not so clear to what extent dibur is a maisa, dibur is not a maisa. Tosus raises the issue in Shvuas and Avchav Aleph, to what extent that's true. We assume lifnei iver there isn't malchus. The Rambam writes in Shoresh Tes of Sefer HaMitzvos that it's called something which is termed a lav shebechlolos. Lav shebechlolos means if you have one prohibition with broad manifestations, so in such a case there isn't malchus. But there is a difference between that which is more direct and that which is more subtle. Sometimes the Gemara writes that the only time you can violate lifnei iver is if it's a direct consequence that he could not have violated without my participation. That's what the Gemara seems to say in Avodah Zarah Davav, but it's interesting the Rambam does not quote that Gemara at all in all the cases of lifnei iver. So maybe there's a difference between treyu v'dinar as opposed to chad eber dinar. Let's assume, for example, if you don't give him the wine, he'll get the wine someplace else. So the Ran writes that's only rabbinic prohibition. If he could not have possibly secured the wine without your involvement, so in such a case, then yes. So to some extent, right, that will make a difference in detail whether it's forbidden min HaTorah or forbidden Rabbanan.
Yeah. Does it require an action, or just by leaving wine on my table that was already out and not hiding it, hey, would that also be violating lifnei iver?
Right, there is a difference in degree. I would tell you that there are multiple tiers. There's something which is lifnei iver, there's something which is misayeya. So if a person is in a circumstance that he could even, you know, do something to avoid, right, that consequence, that also is what a person should be involved with. But there is a difference between active participation, simply as opposed to failing to remove the mesira samechshol, as opposed to the sima samechshol. So in terms of degree, there really is a difference, but it is an interesting issue. To what extent can one possibly violate lifnei iver almost b'shev al tase, by doing nothing, right? And Rosh Weiss has a lengthy discussion of lifnei iver b'shev al tase, where that is the status quo. Right? Can I be faulted for not somehow disrupting that status quo as opposed to actively providing? Yeah. Yes?
Are there boundaries on dealing with non-religious Jews in terms of doing business with them? I mean, for example, it comes to mind that I often give lab slips to these old patients, and I know that they don't work on Saturday, so they can go to the hospital lab and get the labs done. I can refer them to another lab which is not open, but they usually somehow prefer to go to the lab and get their stuff.
Right.
So I have a problem here. I've noticed this. What do I do? Do I say something to them?
It's a very good question.
Keep my mouth shut, or what?
Right. It is a very, very good question. It depends on multiple considerations. I think the details will make a difference, and it's a very, very important issue. At what extent, where do you draw the line? Where do you argue, for example, that something is so indirect that it's not necessarily a tribute to my doing? One of the factors I just mentioned is whether the person could be able to do that without my participation at all. And the other issue that you find, which is quoted in Kuf Nun Aleph in Shulchan Aruch, is if a person is blatantly breaching these halachos, to what extent do I have to be so concerned with an element of alif ne'iver? A person, for example, is going to be violating these prohibitions meticulously. So in such a case, is that really my lifnei iver? If I just, I'm not providing in the sense, but how far do I have to go to see to it that it doesn't occur? Those are multiple factors that you have involved: the degree of my participation and the religious observance of that particular individual. If it can be done, I think it's a mitzvah rabbah to see to it. If it could be structured in such a way that you're giving the slip to a person for the lab work and they will do it b'chol and not do it b'shabbos, matov ha'manonim. I think that could be that which is clearly beneficial. Not necessarily to the point that would be a full lifnei iver, because after all, you're giving it to them. They could use their discretion to do it at any point in time. And the Shach writes, and this is found in Noda Behud as well, that if you're dealing with a person who is bemazed violating these prohibitions, you can't provide them with, but maybe it's not considered to be misayya la'ovri avera. So I'll tell you the details. Matter, we can speak afterwards. You can speak to the Rav about the details of the issue, but it's a very important point that we very often have. You know, we don't give the wine to the Nazir. We don't feed the Eiver Min HaChai to a non-Jew, but sometimes in a more indirect way, right, our actions can result in the consequence of, which is purely at the discretion of the other individual. So how far does one have to go in that sense? It's a very good issue. Yeah.
Literal meaning of the pasuk actually apply as an aver itself.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the Rambam, you look at the pasuk, right. Even the Rashi and the Kulin seems to apply the other way. That it's almost heresy to say that the literal meaning applies.
Right. It's an interesting issue. I think there are two tiers to the pasuk, and I think based on, let's say, this presentation, that it's true in the realm of iser v'heter, but it's also true in the realm of any type of etzara. So here I would suggest that on that second tier of Eitzara, the Michshal in front of the Summa would also, right, to conform to that standard as well. But it's not necessarily the same as Lifnever in terms of areas of Isser V'heter. Right? I think there are two different domains, the Eitzara as opposed to the Isser V'heter aspect. And that, I think, literally placing the stumbling block in front of the blind person is going to qualify in tier two, even if it's not considered to be, and strictly speaking, conforming to that Gemara Nevada Zarandafa.
Interesting, like how an Isser that the literal meaning is almost it's so detached from the actual
Isser. Right, I think both halves are true. And I think we generally assume that both halves could be Min HaTorah. That's why I think one could certainly salvage the literal example of Lifnei Iver and certainly maintain the embellished, right, the approach of Chazal that it applies in areas of mitzvahs and Yisurim as well.
Thank you. Doing what she's doing. obviously saying something. That's obviously she must have a pretty decent command in the English language. Is he looking to be a shul rabbi? Is that what he's... Not far at all. Yes. So all the more reason why they should live here, so that they don't offend either one of them. I'm just play one on TV. But this is important, right? They live here.
I see a large part
of his family.
Right here.
We are the Sefer HaTorah, probably the main shul. The Sefer HaTorah. Is this HaTorah book?
No, this is a Seder.
This is the Sefer. This is the Sefer. Which Seder is that?